directly to the GOPA-KUMA WAFA or chromorphism invariant. And that's also something which plays a certain role in this talk. Now, it's nice to start with this point of view of symplectic invariants, because there are these three ways to organize the symplectic invariants. These are the Gromov-Witten invariants, and then the Kopa-Kuma-Wafa invariants, and the Donaldson-Thomas invariants. And we believe, more or less, based on non-compact examples, that all of these are essentially the same. Of course, the rigor which they are defined is quite different from this case. So these are defined rigorously in mathematical terms, and these are, while these are, so to say, somewhat intuitive reorganizations of the sum, but they play nevertheless a great motivational role for me, at least. Now, the Gromov-Witten invariants, what you look at, I mean, you look at the symplectic manifold, you don't even need a Calabi-Yau, and you look at maps, and then the image class of this map is called beta, and it's a class H2M. And to these maps, you have a stable compactification of the modulized space, and you integrate a certain virtual fundamental class over it. And in fact, it's nice to organize all this in terms of a generating function. So the generating function that you will see often here is this topological free energy, and it is labeled by lambda, which indicates the genus of this expansion, and then by t, which is a complexified Kähler parameter. And so you can look at this individual fg for a given genus of this of the domain curve, and then you find an expansion just in terms of e to the Kähler parameter beta. So this is a thing which is suppressed in large volume, this this ordering parameter. And the expansion coefficients are basically this Gromov-Witten invariants, which, as I said, can be defined as an integral over this compactified, stable compactified modulized space, and they are in Q. And now, if M is a vacuum manifold of a gauge linear sigma model without a potential, without a superpotential, then there are various ways to calculate this RG. And in fact, in some sense, you can consider this problem as being solved. So there is, you have then enough torus action to actually perform a localization program, and you can calculate all of them. Now, for actually a sigma model with a superpotential, they would be realized then as complete intersection or hypersurface in some toric variety. And the localization here actually fails for G greater than 1. And that is basically because of some difficulties which occur if you, so the basic strategy is you calculate this modulized, compactified modulized space of maps to the ambient space, and then you restrict it to the hypersurface. And that works nicely in the G equal 0 case. But the restriction has pathologies for the higher genus case, and therefore this localization program hasn't been successful for the compact cases. Now, the large N transition techniques, which we also love, they have actually similar difficulties because they rely also on this torus localization in the ambient space, and it's very hard. So even so, you might hope that by ideas that we have seen, for instance, today by Mark Frost, when you patch this by affine patches, that you can eventually generalize this idea of the topological vertex. But the topological vertex, as it stands, works only if you have a non-compact toric variety. So that leaves us basically with only a few possible techniques to tackle this problem. And then one of those is, of course, the V model. And this is solving the holomorphic anomaly. Or the other one is using this type 2 heterotic string duality, and somewhat more speculative, you can hope that this Donaldson Thomas invariants, they have at least to, they have a simpler perfect obstruction theory, so you can eventually try to calculate this Donaldson Thomas invariants directly. And well, since the Gopakuma and Wafer invariants and the Donaldson Thomas invariants are closely related, is some of the techniques which were developed for the Gopakuma Wafer invariants actually find now just justification in the framework of the Donaldson Thomas invariants. Now let's look first at this Gopakuma Wafer reorganization of this object that we are after, of this topological free energy. Now the you see, if you expand it as I did it before, then the data of the individual contributions are basically G, the genus of the domain curve, then this class in H2, and they go into this rational number. Now in the heterotic string, the situation is slightly different. So you have what you talk about when you talk about contribution to such a quantity, you have contributions of BPS saturated states. So therefore, they are also called BPS saturated amplitudes. And the data of the individual contribution is given by the charge of the BPS state. Now, this charge, in the case of the duality to the Calabi-Yau space, can be directly identified actually with H2 and Z. So this is the same data. But instead of G, we have the quantum numbers of the off shell Lorentz group of the in four dimensions. And so we have two of these. Now it turns out that of this BPS states, which are now labeled by this object Q and this two quantum numbers of the SU2 times SU2, there's only a certain combination relevant in the real amplitude, and this combination is written here. So you see this is basically a sum over JR, and so here I omitted. So the JR doesn't appear on this side as a representation. It's just G left which appears. And so in some sense it's only the degeneration of the GR states which actually go into this calculation. And you can reorganize this whole sum in terms of something which is labeled by the genus. And this is then the so-called Gopakuma-Wafer invariant. So it has the label of this class, and it has the label which will turn out to be the label of the genus, which is a complicated resummation of the J left one. And the interesting thing is that at least abstractly, given the data J left and J right, you can do this calculation. And so another way of putting it, that it doesn't depend on the right, is saying it is an index which is defined in this way. And now you can actually calculate the precise contribution of this of this BPS state NG. As I said, this the details of the J right representation doesn't really go into the calculation. And you find using a Schwinger loop calculation, you find the following answer. So this is the answer where the NG Q G appears here and is, of course, if you have followed, so say, the resummation, you see at this resummation nothing happens, it's still an integer, like the BPS states are integers. So you find this integer expansion of the free energy of the topological string. Now, what is remarkable is if you think a little bit about this expression and you take the exponent of this expression, then you can write the exponentiated free energy, and it has this very nice and perfect product form. So it's all given by some products. So the product here is over all the classes Q, and then here is for G equal 0, you have a product of this form, and then for higher genus you have a product which extends then only on over a finite range. like this. And this here you have introduced this parameter, or this parameter here is now explained what it is. So it's a q to the beta or q to the q is actually e to the complexified scalar classes, and I introduce another q, which is e to the lambda. And moreover, I mean, this is so to say for q unequal zero, but if you do just a computation for q equals zero, then you get also something which very much supports this whole Gopa-Kumar-Wafa business, namely, if you take q equals zero and use this formula the expansion of this in terms of this Bernoulli numbers, and then you use a theta function regularization of negative integer values of the theta function, then you get precisely the concept map contributions that were actually calculated by Faber and Pandya-Panda. So the so these contributions are, so to say, manifestly all in. The only thing that you have to do is you have to take the BPS state of the degree zero to be the Euler number over two, which is, of course, always for Calabi-Yau an integer number as well. Now, this gives support that this reorganization is essential. Moreover, if you look at it, then it resembles quite a lot some indices, or maybe even the full partition function of a Hilbert in a Hilbert space of free bosons or free fermions. It's basically like, because these numbers are either positive or negative, so you get either, Gopa-Kumar-Wafa invariants, they are either positive or negative, this is because of the sum, so they are not all positive integers. So it looks very much like it, like an index in some Hilbert space. And the Q lambda that I introduced looks more or less like the tracing a U1 charge in this index. Now, one motivation for looking at this more closer, presenting this here, is also that it's very much related to the Donaldson-Thomas invariant expansion. So here what you have the following exact sequence, and here you have C is a subscheme of M, which is basically made out of the support of D2 and D0 brains, and I is an ideal sheaf. And what Donaldson-Thomas suggested is to look at the modelized space of this ideal sheaf. And then they get also an expansion in terms of this Donaldson-Thomas invariance. And the data which go into the individual contribution is the Euler number of the of OZ. So this is just the is just what they call M here. And then the charge again of the D2 brain in the cohomology lattice of the Calabi-Yau. So you get get a chance of associating to this modelized space of the ideal sheaf an integer, and this integer might be very well much better defined than the actual form of Witten invariants. In particular, is expected that it's this integer. Now, there is a general conjecture of Maulik, Nekrasov, Okunkov, Pandya-Panda in this paper, which says that at least for the open Calabi-Yaus, that the partition function in terms of this Gopa-Kumar-Wafa invariance and the partition function in terms of the Donaldson-Thomas invariant expansion, where this is the Donaldson-Thomas invariant expansion, is actually given just by this expression. Now you see, to make sense out of this prediction, you have to sum obviously over all genus, because it involves this genus counting parameter to the power e to the power of the genus counting parameter. So this conjecture cannot even be checked genus in genus in the expansion of let's say the chrom of Witten invariant. This one? So this one is this is the McMahon function, and this is basically the genus the degree zero contribution. And in fact it's again a pathology, so this thing doesn't match on the nose. You have to multiply the the point is, if you check this conjecture for the degree zero case, it fails. So it fails basically in the most obvious example. It's already failed, but it turns out if you correct for this failure, then the rest is actually okay. So and the McMahon function is written here. Well, the whole conjecture is actually very much related to the topological vertex, because the McMahon function itself is the topological vertex when you have no brains on the boundary. So it's just a random partition. I mean, there is a beautiful reformulation of this topological vertex story, also by Kumpfhoff, where they say this is just a random partition with certain boundary conditions, a three-dimensional random partition. And now this McMahon function is, so to say, the simplest case of this random partition business, because it's the random partition where you put no boundary conditions. And so basically what it is the thermal sum over a random partition in three dimensions, where the Boltzmann factor is just e to the q lambda, e to the e lambda, and the energy is just the number of the boxes. So it's like you have a crystal, and the only thing which goes into the energy is the chemical potential of this crystal, and then so you get this partition. Now, in the non-compact case, basically using the conjecture that the vertex calculates for this non-compact toric varieties, all these quantities to all genus, you can actually prove this conjecture. So that was what Maulik and Nekrasov and Pandria Pande and Okumpov did. But in the compact case, there is nothing to compare with, because we don't know how to sum over all genus. And now this is where I try to make some progress. And I must say, this is, in some sense, this is a thing which was very much investigated 5 years ago, because then string duality was at its height. So this has a lot of background literature, and I hope I make a reasonable account of this literature. But the simplest example is certainly the example of Yao and Zaslow, because in this case, you have just a type 2a on the K3, and you have a heterotic string on T4. And now you can just look what the BPS count on the heterotic side is, and it's very, very true. I mean, it's just the trace over the Ramon sector in the heterotic string, and then you insert an F left, so F is out of bar, is an F left. So basically, you project on the left ground state, and you sum over all the right states, or however you see this, left and right, but you sum over one of the states, and the states over which you sum is just the Heisenberg algebra of the free boson, and the Heisenberg algebra of the free boson gives you this eta function to the 24, basically. So now this is a sort of a restriction of a partition function of the heterotic string on T4, which we know perfectly, and so we know also the restriction what are the BPS states and so on and so forth. Now what Yao and Zaslow have actually argued is that on the K3 side, you can do this the same calculation, or you can map the calculation in the following way. So basically, you try to calculate the BPS states by calculating the cohomology of the modulized space of D brains. And this consists of a deformation space of the curve in a certain class, and then of the deformation space of a flat U1 bundle. Now, since K, the canonical bundle is trivial, you get this relation between the class and the genus. And now you use the fact that you can adjust your metric on the K3 so that you, it allows this class is in a K3 which is torus fibered. So you can view this class as being a base in the fiber class, where this is an elliptic fiber. And now the modulized space 1 is basically given by G points in the base, and the modulized space 2 is given by G vertical positions in these torus vibrations. So in other words, it's just G points modeled out by the symmetric group in of the K3. So it's of the dual case three, because you do have to dualize the torus. And so this is what we call sim case three. And now the Hilbert space of the resolution can the resolution is actually the Hilbert space of this sim G. And now there's some beautiful orbit fold resolution formulas by Goetsche and Sergel, which say what this resolved space is, and it's a nice way of organizing for any space V this formal sum of symmetric spaces, and then you get the Euler orbit fold number like this. And here you see already, I mean, since the Euler number of the K3 is actually 24, you get exactly the same thing than you got on the hedonic side. But what is important for the less supersymmetric situation is that you can also get the individual Betti numbers of this expansion. So so this is given by this nice formula here. And sorry, this is an embarrassing error, because this is a positive product. So it's also given by a product formula, and so you get hands also on the individual Betti numbers of this product. Now, then there is some work by Ozono and Saito and Takahashi used this heavily in applying this to rational elliptic surfaces. And the idea is basically that you have now this reorganization of Kopa-Kuma-Wapa, but you can trace the J left and the J right quantum numbers on the cohomology of this K3, on this assumed K3. And you get, by this you get you get immediately this formula. So the organization of the Kopa-Kuma-Wapa invariants for the K3, when you look in addition not only on the total Euler number but in addition on the individual Betti numbers, which is redundant for the n equal 4 situation but will be important for the n equal 2 situation, then you get this very nice formula here. Now, as I said, I mean for the n equal four situation, this is not very instructive. But if you have a break to 8 supercharges from 16, so basically if you go from, well, you have now various possibilities to do that. I mean, there are two principal applications. The one is you go to a local Calabi-Yau, which is made out of a elliptic rational surface, and then you have n equal 2. And that's basically what Ozono and his collaborators did. But in this case, so to say, you have lost one of the properties which is really nice about this index, namely this deformation invariance, because then you have no complex structure anymore. So in principle, you should ask in this case basically for the full information of J left and J right. But of course, this is more difficult. And the second application is you take a K3, which is fibered by a Calabi-Yau, which is fibered by a K3 surface, and so the situation is we have this nice Goetsche formula also only for surfaces, but we want to have an n equal 2 situation. So this is basically the both tricks that we can play to the surface. Either we fiber it, or we make a local Calabi-Yau out of it. And in the case where you fiber it, you have, so to say, a little bit in more interesting situation, because you have still complex structures, and you can use the fact that this index is deformation invariant to make good models for the modelized space of the brains. And that is basically the result that you get if you do that is the following claim. I mean, if you have a K3 fibration where you have only where you have no reducible fibers, then you and you are interested in the classes in the fiber of the K3, then you basically get this Cedar function, get one Cedar function, and the Cedar function multiplies this Hilbert scheme expression. Now, as I said, I mean, this is a little bit more global than the global case, even so it's a subsector of the Calabi-Yau, because the Cedar function is, of course, the only thing which is interesting in this situation, because the Cedar function carries the information where the fiber degenerates, It carries in particular the information what the Euler number of this Calabiau is. And also, it depends on the intersection form of the K3. I mean, this basically relates also to observations that on this K3 surface, the mirror map has modular properties, which was done by you. Let's see. Okay. So let's see how this formula applies to. So what I do now is, since I know already that it will depend on the intersection of the so we take actually here an example where the Picard number is just one, and then we take an example where the K3 fiber has just the section two, and then we look at various Calabiau, which have these properties. They have just no reducible fibers, and so they have all the total H11 of the total space is two, one of the K3 fiber and one of the base. And now comes handy, and that's actually the other thing of in this paper which I haven't much time to talk about. So basically, what we found in this paper were 10 to the 8 mu of this 2-2 vacuum. So basically, this is a thing that Max Schweitzer does for a long time. So in this case, we looked at complete intersections, and we just scanned many of the things. And you see now that has the effect we can pick very cleverly. So here we picked examples which have all this intersection number 2. And then you see the Euler number has a certain regularity. And now the beautiful thing is that we now can write this setup function that you need in order to construct all this form of Witten invariance in this direction in this form. So basically, it's you parameterize the Euler number by this integer k. And then the zeta function is given by the zeta of k, which is this expression, where these are the normal Eisenstein series. And this Eisenstein series, this index k, is given by this expression. And ultimately, it burns down to the generators of the modular form of the group gamma naught 4. And that is a systematic. So if you would have picked a case where in the fiber you have intersection 4, what we also have done, then you would get here gamma naught 8 in this case. But in all these cases, we have, so to say, nice series where we can write this theta function, which is decisive in order to make sense out of this formula in the n equal 2 context in a closed form. Now, one thing which is also is interesting is that this K3 doesn't admit an elliptic vibration, so you cannot play actually the trick. So you must make a deformation in order to get a good model of the moduli space, which actually keeps into account singular spaces. So the formula works despite the fact that for the smooth Calabiau you never get a fiber which is elliptically fibered. And this is of course the power of this application, that we now have a lot of possibilities to deform the index without changing it, and then we can look for good models. Now, one thing which is particularly striking from the physical point of view is another thing. I mean, if you look at the string-string duality, then you have this moduli space, and the moduli space has a divisor, which we like to call a recoupling divisor, and that is basically where the non-perturbative heterotic string is defined on this divisor. Now, if you believe string-string duality, then of course the vector moduli space of this type 2 is related by string-string duality to the vector moduli space of the heterotic string, and this is by mirror symmetry actually related just to the Kähler classes of the K3 fibered Calabiau. And so what we thought is, I mean, we take this heterotic string, we investigate its non-perturbative properties, we find a nice Calabiau. And the Calabiau leads us at the hand to explore the non-perturbative region, because if we make the basis the dilaton, so the coupling constant for this Calabiau is the dilaton, and this dilaton is so the coupling constant is small if this dilaton is infinite, And so non-perturbative region is the region where the base of the P1 of the K3 population, the base P1 is infinite. But the problem is there are, so to say, several Calabi-Yau which could lead us by the hand, and they are not distinguishable at this divisor, at this perturbative divisor. So again, by looking at this list of 10^8 examples, you find a couple of clever examples which have all these intersection numbers, and now they have all the same Euler number, because I want to have the perturbative data, of course, the same. So the Euler number must be the same. And they have all the theta function, which is just this case theta 4, because of this formula. And therefore, they have the whole perturbative BPS spectrum is indistinguishable. I mean, they have all the same BPS spectrum. But if you look at the first comma fit invariant in the direction of the P1, it's different in these cases. And if you look at the global properties of this modelized space, it's also very different. So some have strong coupling singularities at some region in the modelized space, others don't. And that means basically that the topological subsector of the heterotic string is just not powerful enough to fix uniquely the non-perturbative completion of this theory, except for one thing, which is actually this number H3. So if you could calculate this in the heterotic string, you could distinguish them. But you see the classical intersection number of the heterotic string is H3 and H squared times S. S is infinite, so this is an extremely subleading term in the heterotic string, and people say they cannot calculate it, so it's Narayan does. Don't know how to fix it. So at this point, it's just that this is a very subtle differences between these heterotic strings, which completely determines the non-perturbative fate, and we have to figure out what it is actually. Now, what is the relation to the threshold corrections, which are also in the title? So, so this is some beautiful work. Basically due to Antoniadis, Galvan, Narayan, and Taylor. And so there are two threshold corrections, types of threshold corrections you can look at in the heterotic string. The one is the gauge threshold corrections, and the other are the gravitational threshold corrections. Now you see the threshold corrections are basically very similar objects like we had before. So it's something where you insert in the trace of the Hilbert space this F left and F right in order to project on one side. But then in this case, you have for the gauge threshold correction, you insert the generator of the gauge group, and also the level of the affine Lie algebra actually goes into this definition. And so in the, because of the gauge and gravitational anomaly cancellation for the heterotic string, there's actually the threshold correction to the gravitational couplings and to the gauge couplings are very much related. So the expression for the gravitational correction is very, very similar. And so it's, again, it's at one loop. That means it's a one-loop calculation in the heterotic string. So you integrate over the fundamental region of the torus. And the T2, this is the imaginary part of, tau2 is the imaginary part of the modulus of the torus. And now the what you do is, again, this is this combination. And here, what you should focus on is this particular combination of E2, which is the second Eisenstein series, and this imaginary part of tau. So this combination, this E2, of course, is not modular invariant. But if you add this part to it, it becomes modular invariant. But it, so to say, you can trade holomorphicity against modular invariance. So either you won't have it modular invariant, then you have to add this non-holomorphic piece, or you want to have it holomorphic, then you stick with this modular anomaly that the tau doesn't transform properly. Now, in a beautiful paper by Galvan, Narayan, and Taylor in 95, they found actually, they calculated the coefficient of the term in the effective action, which goes just with R squared. So R is R plus is the self-dual part of the Einstein tensor, and here, and then they try to calculate this expression. And in fact, in this expression, what this expression calculates as a prediction of string-string duality is F0, is F1. And what this expression calculates is FG. Now, what they found in analyzing the string amplitude, which gives to this gives rise to this effective coupling in n equal to 2 supergravity in 4 dimension, is that basically what you have to do is you have just to replace this this combination, this modular combination of the theta function, by this expression, where this is basically also Eisenstein series, so this is just a regularization of this Eisenstein series, and these are the Schur polynomials. So since this is the Schur polynomials, you can write the Schur polynomials as exponent of the sum of this thing, and this by remarkable is actually a quite nice formula. So this gives eta over theta 1. And so this whole thing that you replace is this guy. Now, if you go to the calculation, I mean, now you basically know what you have to integrate, because you know what is the integrand. But the computation is completely horrible, actually. And that is because the integrand is not holomorphic in T and U. And the reason is that the Norine momenta involve combinations of U and U bar, T and T bar. And this is a really horrible integral, which Harvey and Moore have done first for the case G equal 1. And then Borges has systematized this. And that's why it's now called Borges. But if you do it, like Marinho and Moore have actually done, then you find that the holomorphic limit is very, very simple. And the reason that the holomorphic, well, I mean, it's not a reason that the holomorphic limit is simple, but you can guess that this product form of the Hilbert scheme come out just by the Jacobi triple identity, because the Jacobi function can be written as such a product form. And therefore, you get this nice form. So now that we have some confidence in this calculation, I will show you some results. So now we can get this topological numbers to all genus, at least in the fiber direction. And now this is a table to genus 10. And so you see one thing which is important in this table, that that this table is, so to say, triangular. So for every class, if you fix the class beta, then there will be always a smooth curve which has the maximal genus, and then it stops. So the only thing that you basically can do is to reduce the genus by putting on the smooth curve some nodes. And so to say, this is the bound where the smooth curves lie. And for the smooth curves, you can calculate the moduli space directly. And you find immediately that the numbers are correct that you get from the expansion of this Hilbert scheme. And if you are strong, then you can do this also for the one nodal curve and for the two nodal curve and so on and so forth. And so, for instance, for the one nodal curve, then you see these blue lines. They also fit in this formula, which is actually coming from this paper of Sheldon and Kumum and myself. So this was this method of calculating the moduli space of the planes directly. Now, since we have, I mean, an important property in order to convert this for a given class beta into this Donaldson-Thomas invariance is actually the fact that they break. I mean, that a certain degree there are no higher genus. And now you can do the reorganization for this Donaldson-Thomas invariance. And so here is a table of that. So this is for the ST model, as it's called in literature. This is basically the one that Marinho and Moore were able to do the integral explicitly. And so you find, well, I mean, the only point that I only remark that I have to make at this point is that they're all integer. And And but I mean, it's certainly a it's certainly a good program in trying to calculate them by looking at the modelized space of this ideal sheaf, because these are the predictions. Now you have a simplification because you have this K3 fibration, and basically the Donaldson and Thomas invariants anyway were introduced for K3 fibrations. I mean, this was the first paper of Thomas was using K3 fibrations. So you could try to check that. Now, so why I'm so sure that these things are correct. So basically, I can also do the B model calculation for this case. And there's an interesting point which I want to mention to you is the following. I mean, the B model calculation, of course, is a recursive calculation, which is well defined. And it basically relies on this holomorphic anomaly equations, which I have displayed here. And so what you see is, so normally or naively, or the nature of the anomaly is that you expect these quantities to be holomorphic, but there are contributions from the boundary of the modelized space of the Riemann surface, and this is basically from the boundary where the cycle pinches, and this is from the boundary where you get a long tube between two irreducible components of this of the domain curve, and so you get this this relations. And for they're a little bit different for higher genus than for genus Z1. But if you do the solution of this model, then it's very crucial that you find something which you can understand as propagators of a Feynman expansion. And that I will not go into detail, but the central idea is that you can write this this holomorphic derivative of FG as something which you can actually calculate. And the holomorphic derivative, anti-holomorphic derivative of something which you can calculate. And this you can calculate recursively, essentially because it involves only expression which have lower genus than the one you already calculated. And you, of course, you start with Mohr symmetry to calculate the genus zero. The genus zero information is basically given by this formula of Griffith's transversality. So you can calculate this once you have this propagators of the auxiliary quantum field theory. Now these propagators are actually very hard to construct for the higher moduli space, and the reason is that in each step of doing this program, you have to deal with holomorphic ambiguity, because if you take this equation, this is nice, but if you remove the d bars, then you can add any holomorphic quantity to it. And the same actually happens in the calculation of these propagators. So there will be some ambiguity in these propagators. And now it is in the multimodular case, you have a lot of compatibility relations between this ambiguity. And so you see, this is the inverse of this tensor of couplings. This is this Griffith's transversality tensor. And then you have here an expression which depends on, as I will show in the next transparency, it depends on the Weyl-Patterson metric and its connection and so on and so forth. And then you have this, this ambiguity. And you see, if you have more than one index, then there will be a relation, then there will be a non-trivial relation between these objects here involved. And in fact, there will be more and more relations when you have higher moduli spaces. And for this, since you couldn't solve these relations, basically nobody has tried really this compact multimoduli space. There's another relation which comes from the derivation of the second propagator, which is written here. And now you see here in this expression what the Qs are. So the Qs are basically given in terms of the data of the metric on the moduli space of the Calabi-Yau. And for the, so this is a three index object which was in the last equation in the consistency condition A, but then there's a two index object which is in the consistency condition B. Now, what you find if you look at the problem, you can always solve for this A, for this ambiguity in terms of very simple rational functions. So it's basically one over the complex parameter or something. You can solve this ambiguity. And now since the data of the Weyl-Patterson metric, in at least in the holomorphic limit, are directly related to the mirror map, You see that these compatibility relations are all differential relations for the mirror map. So that is interesting because the mirror map, of course, is some of the most enigmatic object in this business. Because if you write C of t, and now C of t will be a function of many of these moduli, then it's the most similar object is the J function of the torus, which has this obviously beautiful integer expansion. And now, if you look empirically at these mirror maps of the multimoduli Calabiau, they are also have all integer expansion. And now it's sort of say the problem is a little bit reduced because now you see in addition they have to fulfill all these differential relations among each other. So this is certainly a very interesting property of these mirror maps of the multimoduli space. Now, if you go on, and we could go on in this question, so you can in principle solve now for all classes in beta. So for instance, in the what I showed you for this K3 vibrations were classes in the fiber, but if you take the B model and you work hard, then you can also fix the classes in the base. However, there is a general problem with the last holomorphic ambiguity, which prevents us, for instance, in this case that we did to do this for higher genus than 2. So 2 we could do, but so this is even given the fact that we put on all the information that we have from the heterotic string. So it's very hard to actually still calculate this. And now I want to finally to point out some things for future work. So as you've seen, I mean, I think it's a big challenge and a useful challenge actually to solve the topological string on a on one compact Calabiau. And so you can think what is the best candidate for this proposal. And the best candidate that I could think of is actually the following Calabiau. So it's a T2 times K3, and it's modded out by a set2 involution, and the set2 involution acts by inverting the T2 coordinate, and it acts as an Enriquez involution on the K3. So this guy is, so to say, barely n equal 2 because it has not a holonomy SU3, but it has a holonomy SU2 times Z2. But it has the advantage that also the heterotic dual is somewhat studied. And the heterotic dual is this so-called Ferrara, Harvey, Strominger, and Wafa model. And this is an orbifold of T6. It's a complicated orbifold with a permutation symmetry, but it's still an orbifold of T6. So you basically take the heterotic string on T6 and make a complicated orbifold. And therefore, you can essentially calculate these indices that you need for the gravitational threshold corrections. Now, the F1 has been guessed, in this case, has not been done by index calculation, but it has been guessed by requiring modular properties, and this is strikingly beautiful. So if you look at this F1, then it has the form, it's log. This is this double bracket means not just the absolute value, but the absolute value with the non-holomorphic data. So basically with the Kähler potential exponentiated and so on in it. So it's, but the Kähler potential, and that's not is a reason why we like this model. All these things are very easy because the periods are not transcendental function. The periods are just rational function, and that is because by this set 2 involution, you don't spoil too much the properties of the K3. So the K3 has relation between its periods, so it has very simple periods, and so you have relatively simple periods. That means the Kähler potential and all this stuff is not really complicated. It never involves a complicated mirror map, so it's more or less classically. And here you see the so this is the expression for F1. So what you see here is the eta function of the T, which is the moduli of the base. I mean, of course, it's also a K3 vibration in a sense that you have by making this involution you make out of the T2 or P1. And you get a K3 preparation which has irreducible fibers at four points which are in weaker surfaces. So at, let's say, at the fixed point. And now the beautiful thing is that this function phi y is actually this Borchert's function, which is a sum. So this is over the positive roots. This is a sum over the positive roots of a fake monster B algebra. And then here, these are coefficients, which, so it has a product form. And this coefficients itself, this looks like a theory, a conformal field theory, in the sense that these coefficients also are simple modular forms. So these coefficients basically are given here. And now, as I said, the model is, you can solve this, you can solve the threshold correction in principle, because the model is a orbifold of the Hadamard string. And then there are also indications that the B model is sort of trivial, because you have it's very likely that you have a decomposition between the base classes and the fiber classes. So the mixing between the base and the fiber classes is not so big, is not so severe. And so, and then the periods are, of course, relatively trivial. And so this is something where I could imagine that we could actually solve the topological string in one compact case. And I think that's where I should end. Yes. No, but the reason that I had this in this transparency is basically because if you look at the vertex calculation, the vertex calculation is an object of which is, so to say, the key object which is abstracted from this large n dualities. So the vertex is the object which has three toric legs and all kinds of brains attached to these legs. But in summing over the intermediate brains, you can calculate also closed string amplitudes. And I also, to say, wanted to give you all things by which you can calculate effectively closed string invariants to higher genus. And the vertex is certainly one of the tools which effectively solves the problem for the toric open case. But I mean, this is. Well, because this is basically the theory that you have from the D6 plane. So I put this on this side. And that's the same reason that I put the Thomas invariants on this. I mean, in some sense, of course, yeah, you could. You could put the Donaldson and Thomas invariants also to symplectic invariants, the reorganization of this effect. I mean, the K3 surface must be at the special value of the moduli space, which actually freezes 11 complex moduli, so that it admits this involution. So the Enriquez involution is an involution which you take a K3 which has two A8 lattices as a Picard lattice, and you exchange basically the two E8 lattices. So basically, the lattice that you get is E8 with length 2, with the double length of the invariant cohomology. haven't heard her talk. The invariant lattice has 10 forms from the Picard lattice of the fiber, and so basically the cohomology of the emerging Calabi-Yau has dimension 12. I mean H11 is 12, and H11 is 11, and H21 is 11, because out of this 10 forms of the fiber you make. You can combine it basically with a circle in the basis. You make 10 to 1 forms, and then you have this 10 that Picard lattice 10 in the fiber, and you have the base. So you have 11 H11 forms. And I forgot how you get the 11 to 1 form, but I can work this out. So the cohomology which emerges is H11 is 11 and H21 is. It's a case which has Euler number 0, and this fact that it's Euler number 0 is, that's a subtle physical argument, but if the Euler number is basically coming in the beta function of all these quantities, and if the Euler number is beta, then the renormalization group is much simpler, and that gives me also hope that you can solve this model, because basically it's more classical than every other case that I know of the club. But the details of this Enrico's convolutions and Bartle-Peters convolutions. The Gopakuma-Wafa invariants. I would say that the Gopakuma-Wafa invariants need less data than the variation. Well, I mean, they certainly need less data than the solving the topological B model. Reason is that this topological B model has a lot of information that you waste at the last moment in taking the holomorphic limit. So if you the function that are relevant to the topological B model have information which is actually very interesting to think about what this really is. But if you do the topological B model, we do all this anomaly equation. I mean, which comes from the fact that the F G depend on T and T bar, and at the end we drop the T bar dependence and get the Gopakuma-Wafa information. So I would say it's not just the variation of the hot structure, but the complex side has much more information, which is actually not used.
So the reason I ask is,
yes. No, in this, let's see, so this is the case where it's basically the STU model one parameter subfamily. I mean, I cannot calculate the Gopakuma-Wafa invariants in this, the Donaldson-Thomas invariants in this case, because there is a mixing of the base class. So the one parameter family is of the nature that I would have to know all the base classes in order to transform to the Donaldson-Thomas invariants. And of course, as you saw these beautiful formulas where you could sum over all the genus are only for the fiber class. So this is so only if I do the B model in addition, I can get some information, but not enough usually to get the Donaldson-Thomas invariants. Only if I look at the particular class where the thing truncates at, let's say, genus 2 or the genus to which I could perform the calculation. Yeah, what you need is the information about the ambiguity, and I would like to know what this is. And this is, I mean, it's not that the monodromies or anything would be enough. No, you have to.
unfortunately smooth.
Well, it goes in three.